Florida is well known for its space shots, but what about Georgia? Good morning and live from Studio 5, I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead this morning, we'll tell you why some residents up in Camden County, Georgia, are speaking out against a proposed new spaceport in their area. What are your questions about this? Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, how you can go out to eat in Five Points and support an endangered local species. It's kind of a cool story. We'll tell you about it in our Going Green. That's coming up. But first this hour, plans are in the works to bring a new spaceport to Camden County, Georgia. Supporters of this new port include everyone from Georgia Governor Brian Kemp to former Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich. However, a vocal contingent of some local residents in Camden is speaking out against the spaceport. In particular, they say they're worried about the impact of launching experimental rockets over the environmentally sensitive Cumberland Island National Seashore. We're going to begin the hour with a closer look at the Camden spaceport proposal. Steve Weinkel is a Camden County resident who's part of a group of people in that region opposing the spaceport, and he's on the line. Steve, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
And if you're up in Camden County, Georgia in particular, we want to hear from you this morning. Where do you stand on the proposed new Camden spaceport? What are your questions? Give us a call. It's 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And our Facebook page is open as well. All right, Steve, the FAA will eventually make the final decision on this spaceport, but certainly both local and state elected officials in Georgia are four square behind this idea. They're calling it a really big economic development opportunity for Camden County. Why are you and some of your fellow residents up there opposed to the spaceport?
Well, first of all, Camden County hasn't made the business case that the spaceport is good for taxpayers. There is no indication from the 11 existing spaceports in the United States that economic booms follow the development of a spaceport. Only NASA and Air Force spaceports do have lots of jobs, but the commercial spaceports are either totally jobless or do not attract any significant number of jobs. And so the whole basis of economic development, it may benefit somewhere, but it's not likely to benefit Camden County. But we're paying the bill for it. We're the ones who are getting taxed on our property taxes. We're the ones who will see our businesses that are related to the operation of Cumberland Island National Seashore impacted by closures and unpredictability of people's ability to go to the island to visit or to camp. And so until Camden County comes up with a proof, which they failed to come up with for 4 years, that there will be economic development, that's just a pie-in-the-sky dream, and it's not occurred anywhere.
It's 549-2937 as we talk about plans to develop the Camden Spaceport in Camden County, Georgia. Now, we did reach out, Steve, to a spokesman for the project, and they declined to appear live on the air, but they did send us a statement. They say Spaceport Camden is a visionary rural development project that will take advantage of Camden's location and aerospace heritage to attract new investment from the $350 billion commercial space industry. They also say this is a public-private partnership and that it will be a catalyst for economic development in Southeast Georgia if granted by the FAA, a unique asset. They say will attract high-paying aerospace engineering jobs and highly skilled manufacturing trades. Now, let's point out there are just two spaceports in the U.S. that they say are capable of vertical launches right now into equatorial orbits, Cape Canaveral in Florida and Wallops Island in Virginia. So commercial space companies will have to coordinate their activities with the federal government. Let's talk about a few things here. When you talk about Cumberland Island, certainly folks in your region feel very strongly about Cumberland Island. What are your concerns about that. According to the spokesperson, the FAA has been investigating the environmental impact of launches from Camden County, and they are also reviewing any other safety issues. We're trying to get a final take from the government on that. But what about your concerns about Cumberland Island?
Well, Cumberland Island is a national treasure. It's unique in that it has a 10,000-acre wilderness area. Wilderness areas are afforded the highest level of environmental protection in the United States. Launching rockets over a wilderness is far more impactful than launching rockets over the Grand Canyon or launching rockets over the Statue of Liberty. When Camden says that there are national seashores at Wallops, Virginia, or at Kennedy Space Center, they're not comparing apples and oranges. The national seashores at those two spaceports are north of the spaceport proper, and trajectories are not allowed over those national seashores. At Cumberland Island, there is no trajectory that is possible that does not go over Cumberland Island National Seashore. So every rocket will launch over Cumberland, and the risk to Cumberland will be not just to a seashore in dunes, but will be to residences, a national wilderness area, the campers who make reservations 6 months in advance, and people who make reservations to go day visit 6 months in advance, they will be impacted by either being diverted or removed from the hazard area. And that's just a total impact on a unique property that belongs to the American people and should not be used by a commercial company.
And are you saying, is it noise pollution that you're concerned about? Is that the big worry, the noise of space launches over the island?
Well, noise is just one. The noise of a space launch is huge, as anyone who's been to Kennedy can tell. Even if they launch small rockets, that noise is not common or known to the wildlife that lives in that area. It will startle people who are not expecting it. And so it's not just the level of noise. It is also the fact that in the environmental impact study that was presented to the public, Camden County's consultant failed to study the impact of a rocket failure, which falls on Cumberland Island. And so we know that those happen. They are well documented. They've occurred at Kennedy. They've occurred at Wallops. They cause extensive problems. In fact, every one of the spaceports has had a major rocket failure that has impacted the environment. And so we don't have just spaceport property that we're worried about. We're worried about a national treasure, which is Cumberland Island National Seashore. Once a rocket falls on the maritime forest and causes a fire that cannot be contained because there are no roads in the wilderness, there's no ability for firefighting equipment to go in to fight a fire, then that wilderness is destroyed. There are 200 and 300-year live oaks in there.
Okay. Let me ask you as a follow-up, referring back to the statement again, according to the spokesperson for this project, the FAA has licensed more than 300 commercial launches without a single injury to the general public. What about that?
That is a misdirected quote. First of all, that's true. But secondly, they have never allowed launches over third parties. They have never allowed launches over campers or residents that own homes downrange just 4 to 10 miles. So, of course, they've never had an accident. They've evacuated the downrange hazard zone of all people. And so to say that you haven't had an accident because you've evacuated people or you launch directly over the ocean where there are no homes, and to compare that to Camden County, where every launch will be over private homes, over campsites, over hiking trails that have both day and long-term visitors, that's just a total misdirection and untruth.
Okay.
Because they brought it up.
And let me ask you as well, the former head of the FAA's Commercial Space Office says the government needs to promote spaceports not just as launch sites, but also as hubs for economic development. As you said, Steve, the FAA has 11 active licenses for commercial spaceports. That includes Cecil Field here in Jacksonville, which has yet to host a launch or a landing. This former FAA official pushed back against the criticism that too many of these commercial spaceports are being developed. At the same time, we've been given a poll that was conducted in your county showing that a majority of residents are approving the spaceport. I want to ask you your response to that poll, and also wondering about the proximity of the Camden spaceport to Cecil Field. If Camden goes ahead, that would be two spaceports pretty close together, Cecil and Camden.
Yes, but they're two different types of spaceports. Cecil will use horizontal launch aircraft to carry a rocket aloft, and then that rocket will be fired once the aircraft is over the Atlantic. They will not allow the rocket to be launched over Jacksonville or Jacksonville beaches. It will be offshore, and that is the policy of the FAA for that type of launch. So that's just not comparable to what will happen here in Camden. In Camden, the rocket will be launched straight up, and in some cases, Camden has asked for the rocket to come back and to land on the spaceport like SpaceX is doing now at Kennedy and at Vandenberg. But in Spaceport Camden, the reliable rockets of SpaceX, which still have their accidents, they don't operate at 100% safety. They operate at 96% safety, which means 4% of their launches fail. And their first-generation rocket, 50% of their rockets failed. And at this point, most of the small rocket manufacturers are having 100% failure rates. And so we need to make sure that Camden's generalizations about the space industry are looked at specifically for Spaceport Canada, because that's all we're concerned with.
Would you be okay with the spaceport if it were put together the way Cecil is going to be conducting its launches, offshore rather than over land, over homes?
No, it won't work here because there's no possible way for us to put a runway long enough on the spaceport property to accommodate that type of spacecraft.
Okay. And let me get to some...
It has an extra long military quality runway.
And I want to get to some calls from listeners up in Camden County, Georgia, both for and against this project. If you're just tuning in, we're looking at plans to construct a spaceport in Camden County, Georgia. What are your questions? 549-2937. Roseanne is in Camden County. Hey, Roseanne, good morning. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me. I first want to say I'm no expert on SpaceX, but I did want to say I do support it. I think that the only job growth that we have currently in St. Mary's and Kingsland, which are the two towns for Camden County, are pretty much just restaurants and grocery stores that support the growth for the naval base in Kings Bay. So if we had anything that added to job growth, like a program like SpaceX, I think that would be great. Any new jobs could be beneficial to the community for long-term and short-term. But I think I remember initially it's about 75 to 80 jobs that would be initially for a SpaceX program. But like I said, I think if we had that and it was successful, we'd have a lot more jobs long-term.
Okay.
So yeah, I just wanted to say support it.
Thanks, Roseanne. That's certainly the argument for this, Steve. What about that job growth?
Well, Roseanne has fallen victim, like many Camden citizens have, of the spaceport's promotion, making people think that Spaceport has the least bit of interest in Camden County. They don't. They're not coming here. They have a Texas spaceport that they're actively developing. They have enlarged their presence at Kennedy Canaveral to the extent that they have major launch pad facilities and hundreds of millions of dollars of investment there. Spaceport Camden would have cost only $20 million for SpaceX had they been interested. That would be pocket change for the morning, one day a week for SpaceX. And so had they been interested, they could have done the project themselves. They're not coming to Camden. And there is no one equivalent to SpaceX. But more importantly, the kinds of companies that might come here, the ones that Camden has been teasing us with, there's only one successful company. It's called Rocket Lab. And they have their own commercial spaceport, and they employ a total of 30 employees at the spaceport. And that's including drivers and maintenance people and rocket scientists. Now, they build rockets in the U.S. and in New Zealand, and they assemble them on site. They only need 30 people for that. That will have no impact. We have a new project that the Navy has recently announced that will create 1,000 new technical jobs in Camden County that the Navy has said they don't know how we're going to fill those positions.
You're talking at Kings Bay?
Yes, at Kings Bay.
Well, wouldn't people, would people move? Could people move there to take the job? Would they recruit from around the country?
Well, they'll have to. But Camden isn't prepared to house those people. Instead of focusing on Spaceport, we should be focusing on the 1,000 new jobs that will last for Kings Bay for the next 40 to 50 years.
All right. And let me get to a few more calls, Steve. Terry is on the line in Kingsland, Georgia. Terry, good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you for having my call.
Sure. Go ahead, Terry.
Okay. Well, the FAA is pushing these non-NASA spaceports all over the United States, and they rarely launch rockets. They just end up costing the surrounding area a lot of money. But our particular situation, our commissioners want to purchase some toxic land from Union Carbide, which is constantly adding more toxins. They're finding more toxins in it. And you asked about pollution. Well, these rocket vibrations may shake loose these toxins, and right under that land is our Floridan aquifer. So that's a very serious problem. And so I was wondering how Steve might address that.
Okay, thanks for that. Now, it's my understanding, Steve, that the spaceport would be sited on property currently owned by Bayer Crop Science and Union Carbide. The county, Camden, has a purchase agreement in place with Union Carbide. Is that right?
Yes, however, there is no agreement with Bayer. That property is just speculative. So the only agreement, the only discussion is with Union Carbide, and we have seen a heavily redacted contract with Union Carbide for that property.
So to be clear, this project isn't a go yet, just so folks understand. It's planned. The FAA wants it. State and local officials are certainly bullish on it. It's still in the planning stages. Is that right? What will be the next steps for final approval of this and construction?
There are three things that need to happen. The FAA has to release a final environmental impact statement. That's scheduled to happen in November. That's been delayed now about a year and a half from its original target release date. And that's because of the complications found at the Spaceport Camden site. The narrow perspective that Camden has to meet for a spaceport is that all they have to do is find a single trajectory for a notional, which means a fictional rocket, that the FAA will accept as a possible launch corridor, and that they will issue a license and then on a case-by-case basis determine in the future whether additional rockets can be launched. After the final EIS is released, the FAA may allow additional public comments or may not. They haven't announced if they will allow additional public comments. But then 30 days later, they issue their decision, their record of decision about the spaceport, whether to accept the environmental, the spaceport as not having a significant environmental impact. But that would be only on that single case for that single trajectory for that notional rocket. And so one of the things that has us concerned is that Camden County will not release their application. We don't know what they've asked for. The public has been kept totally in the dark. It could be they're asking for the tiniest rocket that does not exist, and it might be on a trajectory that is unrealistic based on the empirical data of the 300 launches that the FAA has
launched. All right, and let's get some more feedback on the air from emailers, listeners, people tweeting the show. Here's an email from Terry in Kingsland, Georgia. She says, the main problem is the rockets would be shot over occupied private property on both Cumberland and Little Cumberland Islands. It seems no one bothered to look at the map before going forward. The trajectory given by the FAA and the Camden County Commissioners is too narrow for a workable spaceport. She says, nowhere else in the U.S. are rockets launched from anywhere but a coast, and this spaceport would be well inland at Harriet's Bluff. This is an exceedingly bad idea for those who live in the launch danger zone. Basically reiterating your comments, Steve, but let's get some more callers on the air. Mike is in Riverside right now. Hi, Mike. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you doing?
Good. Go ahead.
Hey, I'm calling from Riverside. I worked with an engineering firm that did consulting for spaceports, and I question the economic viability of spaceports because there are 11 of them in the country. And all of these spaceports are vying for in anticipation of hypersonic space travel, which means that one day Blue Origin, Virgin Atlantic, or SpaceX is going to get you from the United States to China in an hour and a half. Well, it's kind of like the superports. I mean, there are only going to be one or two spaceports because it's not going to be like every part of the country is going to have a spaceport, because you're only going to have one. And the most viable one that I can see is in Houston, where you're right in the middle of the country. These hour-and-a-half flights coming from China would arrive there, and then you would go be strategically located to get to the other parts of the country. The whole idea of having a spaceport throughout the country, it just seems ludicrous. It's like I said, it's like the superports. How many superports are we going to have with these big vessels coming over from Asia? So I just question the economic viability of the whole idea of multiple spaceports.
All right. Thanks for your comments, Mike. Scott's on the line. He's visiting from Savannah. Hey, Scott.
Excuse me. Can I have a comment?
Hi, Scott. Scott, you're on the air.
Hey, how are you?
Go ahead.
Hey, thanks. Thank you. Hey, I just wanted to call in and say I'm very pro spaceport. My business actually in Georgia is in the film industry, providing office space, warehousing, and housing when films come in and film off-site away from a studio. So I saw a big opportunity here for me and for the residents, basically on housing these space executives, like when they're coming in before and after a launch, because that's where you see an opportunity. Aside from, it's very similar. It's people coming in, they'll need office space, warehouse space, but the housing is a big opportunity, I think. And that's something that's really overlooked, I think, to the local residents. This kind of creates a huge, you know, event where you have a lot of people come in. And, you know, for someone with the second home, it might be an opportunity to keep that home versus selling it.
Okay.
For someone with a primary home, it's a way to take a free vacation.
Yeah. So you're arguing for sort of ancillary economic impacts, positive ones,
Yeah. I mean, if you look at what the film industry has done, it's amazing. Georgia is now the leading film state in America. And I think the spaceport gives you an opportunity to do something unique. And, you know, it's suddenly creating a lot of economics, not just for the companies, but for all the locals that live in that area.
Okay. Thanks for that, Scott. Steve Weinkel, what about the secondary jobs that could be created from the spaceport?
They could be. But in St. Mary's and Kingsland, this area has been used for many films and TV series over the years. And nobody's built a film studio here or a hotel facility to accommodate the film stars. So when we take a look at what's possible, you can say anything is possible. But the fact is that even in Savannah, Scott runs a company that does that. He's even posted on his website, which I've looked at, extracts of pictures from Spaceport Camden in order to promote his business. And so, of course, you can make statements. We could have more car dealers, too, because of all the influx of people whose car breaks down. But the fact is Camden taxpayers should not be subsidizing any of that.
And we have a question. Let me jump in. We have a question from people wondering about that, the cost to taxpayers. Dan is on the line from Kingsland. Hi, Dan. Good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead, Dan.
My question is about how much money has already been spent so far, because obviously we don't have a spaceport yet. And specifically, I know the one job I know that's been created is a highly paid consultant. And so I'm sort of interested in how much he's being paid.
Okay, thank you for that. Cost so far from Camden County, Steve Weingold.
Yeah, okay.
It's about $6 million, isn't it, I think?
It's over $8
million. Okay.
But that's not counting the fact that the highly paid county administrator spends much of his time on spaceport projects, so part of his salary and his support staff.
And let me just interject that we did reach out to your county administrator and asked him to appear this morning. He referred us to a spokesperson who did provide us with a statement, which we've read portions of on the air this morning. But your final thoughts about this. What do residents plan to do in the coming months to get their opinion out there to the government?
Well, we do not have the support of the local newspaper to do any investigative reporting. So we find ourselves having to dig through Open Records Act requests on the state level to get the information we have. We have more than enough information indicating that this project should have died a long time ago. We should have saved millions of dollars. This year, we had a 17% property tax increase. Part of that money went to pay the PR guys $8,000 a month salary that we've been paying for several years now. And so the county won't speak. They'll get their PR guy to speak. I'm just a private citizen who spends my own time and my own money to do investigation, with them obscuring the information as much as they can and refusing to talk about it publicly. So what we're doing is we have a petition circulating in order to rescind the county commission's right to purchase the Union Carbide property, which scares us greatly because we get obligated to all of the liability that comes with that property. Then we're also trying to make sure that the public is well informed so that, just like the earlier caller, they understand that SpaceX is not coming here. We are certain that people have chosen to believe that it will be a panacea. The spaceport will solve lots of problems here. But the fact is, it won't create but a few jobs. It's created none locally. All of the major expenses have gone out of Camden County and most of them out of state. And so what we're trying to do is just make sure that people are informed. We have a website, www.spaceportfacts.org. And we try to put information on that website so people become better informed.
All
we
right.
try to pin down the politicians, but they won't allow us to pin them down. They won't answer.
I'll tell you what, we will keep requesting an interview with them. We'll keep following the story because certainly there's a lot of interest in it up your way. So, Steve Weingold, thank you for sharing your thoughts about the proposed Camden spaceport. Thanks for appearing.
Thank you, Melissa.
Okay, up next, they say birds of a feather flock together. That means in Jacksonville, a local restaurant and a preservation group. What's this all about? We'll tell you why after this.
I'm Courtney Lewis, music director of the Jacksonville Symphony. Brahms' Piano Concerto No. 2 possesses an overwhelming depth of melody. You'll hear it performed by the symphony and piano virtuoso Natasha Peremski, whom the London Classical Source calls fiery and widely dynamic. Piano virtuoso Natasha Peremski joins the symphony for Brahms' wonderfully melodic Piano Concerto No. 2, October 25th and 26th.
Take a drive with us into the Blues Horizon, the best in classic and modern blues. Every Monday and Wednesday night at 11. Right here on 89.9 WJCT.
This Going Green segment is made possible by A1A Solar.
Welcome back. Well, the popular Five Points Eatery Crane Ramen and the North Florida Land Trust are teaming up. They're trying to raise funds and awareness for Sandhill Crane Preservation. It's our Going Green today as we welcome Fred Brown, the owner at Crane Ramen, and Genevieve Fletcher, development officer at North Florida Land Trust. Hey guys, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Okay, so you're the owner of Crane Ramen. What brought you together with the Land Trust to focus on the Sandhill Crane? Kind of an interesting partnership here.
Well, I think I need to take it back to, you know, naming the original Crane Ramen in Gainesville. We struggled with what can we do? What sort of imagery, what connects us to Gainesville and what will connect us in a universal way? And, you know, we're hearing the cranes overhead, and they make a lot of noise, and they come to Payne's Prairie by the tens of thousands every year. So he said, the crane, that'd be a great symbol for us. So Crane Ramen became Crane Ramen, mm-hmm. and the Sandhill Crane became our mascot and our symbol.
So with that, the Land Trust, of course, is engaged in preserving environmentally sensitive lands and the wildlife on them, Genevieve. So how is this all going to work? What's going to happen to your efforts to protect this animal, the Sandhill Crane?
Well, Crane Ramen actually approached us a couple months ago, and we were excited to find that we shared a common goal. With their interest and love for the Sandhill Crane, it just made sense. The North Florida Land Trust works to protect large open landscapes which support habitat for sandhill cranes. So with the crane being the symbol of Crane Ramen, we both saw it as a great opportunity to raise awareness about these magnificent birds and the Land Trust work to preserve their habitat.
Very nice. And this is an easy thing that people are going to be able to do, right, at your restaurant? Just have a drink.
Absolutely.
And they can support the Sandhill Crane.
And come in and get the guana grog.
The guana grog. What's in the guana grog?
The guana grog is a tiki-style drink with lots of fresh juices.
Sounds perfect to me.
Yep. We work with the Alachua Conservation Trust in Gainesville, and so that's another reason why we thought a perfect fit moving into the Jacksonville area would be working with the North Florida Land Trust.
Very cool. So if you go into Crane Ramen in Five Points and you order a guana grog, $1 of each cocktail will go toward North Florida Land Trust,
yes,
right?
Yes, $1 of each cocktail.
Okay, so everybody needs to order lots and lots of guana grogs. in addition to the food, which, by the way, is amazing at Crane Ramen.
Thank you.
Yeah, you've had a huge success in Jacksonville. What do you attribute that to?
Well, I think we really built on our success in Gainesville and that we had developed a loyal following there. And actually many people from Jacksonville would drive on the weekends to Gainesville to have lunch or dinner at Crane Ramen.
Okay. Now, Genevieve, let's talk a little bit more about some of the wins North Florida Land Trust has had in recent months. You've been successful. Basically, what you do is you buy up property so that it can't be developed.
Yes.
And you raise a lot of money from people all over the state in your efforts to do that.
Correct. North Florida Land Trust this year is celebrating our 20th anniversary. So we're excited to announce that by the end of this year, so by 2020, we will have protected 20,000 acres in our 20-year history.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Now, in a state that's built on development and, building new homes, building new strip malls and such, that's a big economic driver for the state, of course. At the same time, Florida is rapidly losing its beautiful and environmentally perilous, you know, very sensitive places. So part of the reason people flock to this state is to experience the natural beauty. So the work of the North Florida Land Trust is so important.
Absolutely.
Now, anything else that's planned at Crane Raman to support this, guys? What else is in the works?
Well, we don't have anything planned in the immediate future. We did have our inaugural event with the North Florida Land Trust, which was our Crane to Crane event, and that was a great success. We had, who was the person who?
Oh, Emily Dunn, our stewardship manager, came and spoke and did a talk about Sandhill Cranes and the work that the Land Trust is doing in North
Very
Florida.
Very nice. So
it's a great event.
So stop by Crane Ramen in Five Points and make sure that when you go, you order a guana grog, because you'll be supporting the North Florida Land Trust. Thank you so much, guys. Fred Brown is the owner at Crane Ramen, Genevieve Fletcher, North Florida Land Trust. Thanks for
Melissa.
Stopping by. Well, it's a great new opportunity for local students. Jacksonville's Performers Academy is now offering free art instruction to all high schoolers around town who go to a Title I school, any kid involved or referred from juvenile justice, or involvement with family support services. This starts on October 21st, and it's free. Here with more, Catherine McAvoy, the great Catherine McAvoy, who runs the Performers Academy, and the program manager, Ebony Payne English. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good morning, Melissa.
So good to see you both. This is an incredible opportunity, Catherine. Of course, kids from all over the city come to the Performers Academy, but now you're opening up all of your art instruction to underadvantaged kids, it sounds like. Well, how is this going to work?
Well, we've got, we've been doing arts as therapy for a long time. We've worked with family support services and the foster kids running the camp for the last 8 years for the Just Like Me camp. And now we're taking it to an after-school program, and we're keeping the numbers low. So there's only spots for about 60 kids at any time. But the program runs from 2:30 to 6 p.m. It's meant for high schoolers who are interested in any portion of the arts.
So Ebony Payne English, when the kids come, what will they be doing? Tell us about the classes.
So they get 90 minutes of intense artistic discipline, and they have a primary or a secondary. It's a literacy-infused program, so each element of the curriculum involves a classical piece of literature paired with a contemporary work.
This is so exciting because, of course, as we all know, Catherine, arts and music programs have been cut in most schools.
Exactly.
Budget cuts, they tend to be the first thing that falls away.
Exactly.
The Performers Academy has tried to fill that vacuum by giving kids really enriching arts instruction. And so this is a way for kids that might not otherwise have the opportunity to be part of this. Are you worried at all about transportation, getting the kids to the location?
Absolutely. In Jacksonville, that's our number one concern, and always is. But we know that the arts change lives, and kids that are headed in the wrong direction can be redirected if they can get passionate about something. And we've got all the arts, from visual arts to theater to recording arts to lyricism and singing, songwriting. So we've got everything that is artistically involved. And what Ebony was talking about with the contemporary and the classical is such a cool thing, because we're bringing to life classical piece of literature, like taking a Shakespeare piece and then comparing it to a Tupac piece, you know, and doing the contemporary, something the kids can relate to. And then we take it through each of the art disciplines. So it's a really cool curriculum that helps not only with arts as therapy, but it's also a literacy component.
Now, if you have a child you think would benefit from this, just register. This is free and it's starting next week. Go to theperformersacademy.org, theperformersacademy.org. This is a free program for kids from Title I schools, any kid referred from juvenile justice or involved with family support services. Now, you also have a free program starting this week and at the main library, too, right?
Oh, you're yes. busy. Yes. We got so many programs, Melissa. Thanks for mentioning that. So, Ebony runs this fabulous program for poets.
So it's called Product of My Environment. It's at a partnership with the Maine Library in the city of Jacksonville. It was taken off of Jack's Youth Poetry Slam, which is an annual event they've been doing there for 15 years. And we take 5 to 10 kids every year to Brave New Voices International. Chi is the poetry coach for the youth there. And Rob Otis is joining us this year for the season.
Wow.
And last year they took them to Las Vegas University where they competed, and to take the kids, again, it's all paid, to take the kids on a trip like that to see what lyricism and poetry can do for you is just incredible. It's an incredible opportunity.
Well, I think you're incredible, Catherine, and
aww.
You too, Ebony. Thank Everything you, you do for the arts in this community is such a wonder. And so if you haven't heard of the Performers Academy, and you think you have a child that could benefit from these free programs, just register now on their website. Again, that website is theperformersacademy.org. Amazing things happening in that space. It's over on Atlantic. It's on Beach. It's on
right
Beach Boulevard,
split.
Right. Beach and Atlantic Boulevard split. So that gives you an idea of where it's located. So Catherine McAvoy, always so good to see you.
Great to see you, Melissa.
Ebony Payne English, an amazing artist in this community. So good to have you as well.
Thank you.
And so I hope lots of kids sign up because it's free, people. So don't miss the opportunity.
Thanks.
In a moment, tastes from around the world come to San Marco. We'll have a preview of the V-Glow dinner. You will not believe this. We'll be right back.
I'm Courtney Lewis, music director of the Jacksonville Symphony. Brahms' Piano Concerto No. 2 possesses an overwhelming depth of melody. You'll hear it performed by the symphony and piano virtuoso Natasha Peremski, whom the London Classical Source calls fiery and widely dynamic. Piano virtuoso Natasha Peremski joins the symphony for Brahms' wonderfully melodic Piano Concerto No. 2, October 25th and 26th.
On the next Fresh Air, director, screenwriter, and actor Taika Waititi. His new film, Jojo Rabbit, won this year's Audience Award at the Toronto Film Festival. Set in Nazi Germany, it's a comedy drama about a 10-year-old boy who's brainwashed in the organization Hitler Youth. Waititi also directed the hit film Thor Ragnarok. Join us today at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
A dozen Democratic presidential candidates took the debate stage in Ohio last night. Only one of them will face President Trump next year.
I think what would be a disaster if the American people believed that all we were doing is taking on Trump.
I'm Ari Shapiro. We'll analyze the crowded Democratic presidential field this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world. The race for the White House continues to heat up. Democratic rivals Elizabeth Warren, Joe Biden, and Bernie Sanders remain out in front. What hope is there for the other nine candidates on the TV debate stage? We'll get some perspective on this Democratic dozen from the party's chairman, Tom Perez, next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, Jacksonville's culinary scene is exploding these days. We've just got an incredibly diverse range of restaurants and talented chefs bringing influences from across the globe. One local star is Chef Mimi Lan, a.k.a. the Taste Curator. Mimi is known for her intimate V-Glo pop-up dinners. V-Glo stands for Vietnamese with Global Influences. Now, the next highly coveted V-Glo event, and believe me, this is an event, is coming up this Sunday at Matthew's Restaurant in San Marco. Chef Mimi Lan is here now with a little taste of what the lucky attendees can expect. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being with us. So tell us more about this V-Glo concept.
So Vietnamese food already has very sophisticated and complex flavors with influences from France, China, Thailand, and Cambodia. But I took it a step further by using classic Vietnamese recipes that I grew up eating and tweaked it with flavors from my global travels. So I created V-Glo, spelled V-I-G-L-O, and like you said, it's short for Vietnamese with Global Influences. And they are pop-up dinners held twice a year at different venues in Jack's. But next year, I'll be doing my first global pop-up in Saigon, Vietnam, and hopefully more cities to come.
Wow, so you're global. So for those lucky enough to come Sunday to Matthew's in San Marco, what will be on the menu?
Okay, so first of all, the dinner will be this Sunday at Matthew's Restaurant, and the dinner starts with Vietnamese goi ga, which is like a chicken salad with kumquat champagne vinaigrette dressing. The next dish is a collaboration with Chef Alexander Yim, who's the chef de cuisine at Matthew's Restaurant. It's gourmet congee made with green bamboo rice topped with sea foie gras and accompanied by six exotic condiments.
Oh my gosh. And I know what a good chef you are, so I know this is going to be an incredible dining experience.
Well, thank you.
Now, this is a pop-up, so you kind of pop up at different places around town. Why do you think all of these really esteemed restaurateurs want to be the venue for your pop-ups? It doesn't seem they see it as competition. Is that right?
Well, the chefs know that I'm not competing with any of them. I have the utmost respect for chefs, but I have no interest in working in a restaurant full-time. I do this more of a passion than anything else.
It's just your personal passion.
Yes.
Because Vietnamese food, as you said, is revered for its complexity, its freshness. There's something really special about this cuisine, isn't
yes.
there?
Well, Vietnamese food is just has a lot of influences from different countries. And so for each of my V-Glo dinner, there's a theme. And this one is a French theme because French colonized Vietnam for 100 years.
Right.
So it's very interesting.
It's a mashup of food cultures.
Yes.
Now, in addition to V-Glo, what else are you working on?
So I'm glad you asked. I'm currently working on my cookbook, which is part travelogue, part food memoir, and part recipes. And please don't ask me when it's going to be finished because I have no idea.
No idea. All right. This V-Glo dinner is this Sunday. But
yes.
if people can't grab their tickets before it sells out, And that's at 904tix.com and just search Viglo, V-I-G-L-O.
Yes.
You do these semi-regularly. There'll be other opportunities to come out and do this, right?
Well, yes. First of all, my dinner is usually sold out by now, but we didn't want tickets to be all gone before this show. So we saved some tickets for your listeners. And like you said, just go on 904tix, that's 904TIX, and search for Viglo, V-I-G-L-O. And my next dinner is going to be next summer, and the theme's going to be seafood. So if you want to be on my distribution list, send me an email at mimi@tastecurator.com. That's TASTECURATOR. Or follow me on Instagram at The Taste Curator.
The Taste Curator. And get your tickets now for the Viglo pop-up Sunday at Matthews in San Marco. Chef Mimi Lan will be the delicious creator of all of this exciting cuisine, part of Jacksonville's really burgeoning food scene. And thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And that's our show. Thanks for listening. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Michelle Corum directs the show. Our news director is Jessica Palumbo. Bill Bortsfield is our digital editor. Tomorrow, don't miss it as we speak with the chair of Jacksonville's Charter Revision Commission. It's a low-profile affair, but their work could be very influential about the future of this city. What is it all about? We'll take a closer look. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect. If you're listening to our rebroadcast tonight, just keep listening for some great music. We'll see you tomorrow morning.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.